You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Commodities have caught the eye in 2025, and there's so many commodities to cover that it would be beyond the scope of this podcast. So we're going to be focused on precious metals, that's the PGMs and gold, and also the oil price. We'll have a look at that, the fundamentals behind all of those commodities. And also at the end, we'll talk about copper, which has come late to the party. With me to do so is Mohammed Dokrat from 91 in Cape Town. It's been quite a year, Mohammed. You must have been very busy.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lindsay. And I mean, it's been certainly interesting in the commodity space. And I think broadly as a theme, coming out of COVID, many supply chain bottlenecks were identified. And as we move into a more sort of geopolitically fragmented world, we've seen the desire for many governments to onshore production and to secure the supply of critical minerals across many different sectors. And so this broad sort of theme has seen relatively strong demand for commodities. And if you sort of factor in what's happening on the supply side, this has resulted in pretty strong metal prices across the board, but especially, as you mentioned, the precious metals. And if you look at the PGMs in particular, we've been bullish on this commodity for most of the last year. And there's sort of three primary reasons why. The first is that, you know, the supply picture based on our fundamental bottom-up modeling indicated that you were going to see lower supply coming out of the primary producers in South Africa. And that's just a function of, you know, them not having sufficient margin and capital to invest over the past decade. And as some of their older mines from the 1990s start to come to their end of life, we have not seen enough investment into replacement or growth projects to offset this. And basically every year from here on till 2030 plus, we see a low supply coming out of South Africa. If you add to that then what's happened on the secondary supply market, you know, you've seen significant downgrades to forecasts relative to a few years ago. And there's basically just not been enough scrappage of secondhand vehicles, which is the primary contributor to secondary PGM supply.
Do you think there's going to be in the situation where there's actually a shortage of certain of the PGM basket?
Yeah. And so if you look, you know, on our fundamental so modeling, we've got near to medium term deficits for all three metals, so platinum, palladium, and rhodium, over the next 2 to 3 years. And in fact, the World Platinum Investment Council just put out their latest forecast, which indicates an 850,000 ounce platinum deficit in 2025 and continued deficits of about 600,000 ounces per year thereafter. Now, on a market of 8 million ounces in total, that's a 10% deficit, which is substantial in any commodity. I mean, in copper, for example, that would equate to a 2.5 million ton deficit, and the market's getting excited about a 200,000 to 300,000 ounce deficit next year. So it looks quite constructive on that metric. And, you know, as I mentioned, supply certainly is the key driver over the sort of near term. But we also think that demand expectations have been underestimated by the market. And, you know, talking about deficits in PGMs would have been seen as ludicrous just 2 years ago when everyone expected battery electric vehicles to rapidly reduce demand for PGMs, which are mainly used to clean up exhaust emissions from combustion engine vehicles. And so I think it was about 2 years ago only the market thought that by 2030, BEV sales would account for one in every two cars. But actually, you've seen over the last year or two, that estimate has dropped to about 30 to 35% of new car sales by 2030. And even there, there seems to be some downside risk, just as the challenges and the cost of implementing this massive energy transition are becoming more apparent. And if you add to that the fact that we enter in a global interest rate cutting cycle where consumers might have more disposable income, the average age of vehicles far exceeds long-term averages across the US and the European market. And actually, China is just making cars more affordable again. So we think that the overall vehicle demand number will likely surprise market estimates. And if you combine that with the very tight supply coming out of the PGM markets, we think that these deficits could materialize over the next 2 to 3 years at least.
So it's almost the perfect storm for PGMs if you're a bull, that is. And obviously things change, but it seems to me that this could be quite a long-term cycle we're going into to the upside. Let's move now to the yellow metal. I look at the yellow metal and I think, right, you've got the really big demand and the really big solid holders where this came from the central banks, and then that pushed the price up, and then that got people excited, and people got excited and started buying, and ETFs were created, and it went on from there. It's obviously had a pullback, which we'll talk about, but is gold still in a bull market, and why, please, Mohammed?
Yeah, I think you sort of captured the broad sort of reasons behind the rally, and it's been quite incredible over the past 2 years, and you know, the 50% rally year to date has been quite staggering. And so, I mean, the way I think about it, there'd probably be two broad themes that are driving this. And within those, obviously, there's a lot of subcomponents. But the first one just being the mix of monetary policy easing conditions that are manifesting and are likely to continue as the Federal Reserve and other central banks cut interest rates. And secondly, this fiat currency debasement theory, which is certainly driving central bank and more recently investment demand as a portfolio hedge. And so, you know, if just starting with, 2022, when Russian central bank assets were frozen, there was a market shift in central bank purchases of gold coming from emerging markets, especially China. And so, you know, in 2024, about 5,000 tons of gold was consumed, or with central banks accounting for about 25% of that, so over 1,000 tons, for the third straight year in a row. And this year, again, we're running slightly below that sort of level that we were last year, but still well above the 2010 to 2021 average. And more recently, there's been a surge in investment demand from institutions and retail investors. I think the gold ETF saw $26 billion inflow in the third quarter of this year, which is a record. And September alone was the single largest month ever in terms of ETF inflows. And so, you know, talking to why people would be now waking up to gold and still seeing value in this is that the central banks are cutting interest rates, which lowers the opportunity cost of owning the metal. But I think the more sort of bigger theme is this debasement theory, which suggests that overly indebted DM countries don't have the political appetite to implement austerity measures required to reduce their debt. And so as you see widening fiscal deficits, the only real option left for them is to inflate their way out of their debt. And so they run nominal interest rates below inflation, which transfers wealth from the savers, i.e. your cash in your bank, to the debtors, which is the government. And so as this happens, it reduces the purchasing power of your cash. And therefore, it's quite bullish for equities, but also especially for hard assets like gold, like commodities and property. Because it's the only real way to preserve your purchasing power in this environment.
Do you think that that last point, just as we end this gold discussion, do you think the last point you made about the indebtedness of nations and inflating their way out of it is a long-term bullish factor for gold? Because it doesn't seem as though that sort of policy can rid themselves of debt overnight.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it looks like for us at least that we still remain in a structural long-term bull market. But, you know, the recent pace of the rally just got a bit aggressive. And so the subsequent correction we've observed over the past week or 10 days or so indicates that some of that momentum had gotten to extreme levels and there needed to be some healthy consolidation. Now, normally for security in a strong uptrending market, you can get periods of short-term momentum pullback that usually lasts around 2 to 4 weeks, and you get prices pulling to the 50-day average. In this case, it would be about $3,700 per ounce. But we still believe that, you know, in this pullback, you're likely to see a lot of people who missed the first rally still allocate some of their portfolio holdings to gold. And actually, there's a recent survey by one of the large sell-side research houses which poll the fund managers, and it indicates that many of them still have relatively low allocations to gold in their portfolios and are likely to increase their holdings going forward, and more likely you know, we believe that in the past where you would allocate 40% of a multi-asset portfolio to bonds, we think over time that allocation is likely to reduce in favor of hard assets like gold and other commodities.
Okay, let's move on from the yellow metal to black gold, and that is the oil price, of course. Now, this is a classic commodity when it comes to weighing up fundamentals versus geopolitics, Mohammed, and 2025 has really driven home that point.
Yeah, you know, the oil price is down 13% year to date, and it's pretty rare for the oil market to be such a consensus bearish view across almost every commodity research team and all the oil agencies like the IEA, EIA. The only one with a slightly different view, perhaps biasly so, is OPEC. But of course, they control a significant share of the global supply and can massively influence the fundamental picture by withholding or releasing that supply. And so if you look at the fundamentals, you know, global demand growth for this year and for next year is only around 700,000 barrels per day, which is almost half the sort of long-term average demand growth over the past 20 years that we've witnessed. But even in this low demand picture, we continue to see massive waves of supply coming online, both from OPEC as they continue to restore production, which they previously cut to, you know, sort of help the market over the past 2-3 years, but also non-OPEC supply from sources like Brazil, Guyana, et cetera. And so, you know, based on our forecasting, we expect a market surplus exceeding 2 million barrels per day average next year. And if you get this kind of surplus, you know, you tend to get inventory bulls in pricing hubs. And global inventory balances this year have been increasing, especially over the past 6 months, indicating that our surpluses of about 2 million barrels per day are accurate. And so with this environment, you'd expect to see oil below $60. But actually, you've seen, especially over the last week, that as it got to that level, it promptly came back up above $65 per barrel. And that, once again, has just highlighted the is a geopolitical supply risk factor in the oil price that could be a wild card, which could significantly alter market balances. And the latest news was the U.S. moving to sanction two of the largest Russian oil companies. And therefore, you know, as these companies are sanctioned, you've seen India and China saying that they will stop taking delivery of Russian oil. And so they obviously have to then replace these barrels from elsewhere. And so that big surplus that we spoke about, the 2 million barrels, could easily be wiped away if Russian oil is not allowed access into the market, because they export over 3 million barrels per day.
It's very interesting as well that in the last few days, one of those Russian oil companies has decided to sell all of its international interests. So this is a story that will continue. Yeah, let's now look at a commodity that has suddenly started exciting people. And one of those people was a colleague of yours in London, and he got he had some very interesting ideas about where the copper price is going. Are you as excited as he is about it?
Yeah, definitely. I think as a house, we have quite a positive outlook for copper. And we just have a belief that this industrial metal will continue to play a critical role in the energy transition, in technologies such as electric vehicles, which use 3 times the amount of copper that a normal vehicle uses, but even more so in other areas like the power grid investment that's required to support the power-hungry data centers that are needed for artificial intelligence and other sort of electrification across many industries. And so, you know, generally the market is quite constructive copper on a long-term basis, but we had a view that copper deficits might materialize earlier than markets expected, because we believe that everyone was underestimating the supply disruption from some of the major mines that are going on, such as Freeport's Grasberg mine in Indonesia. You've had Kamoa Kakula in the DRC, Anglo Teck's QB2 and Kolwezi mines also lowering their guidance over the next year or two. And so with this major supply disruption risk against a market that continues to see strong demand, we had deficits beginning from next year and actually above the top end of the consensus deficits for next year. And so we were quite bullish that prices would rise.
Overall, the commodity complex, if you look at it as an index, including all the ones we've just spoken about, would you say that you are still bullish? Again, I'm talking about commodities as a whole, Mohammed.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I think in the world that we found ourselves in, where countries are unsure in supply, geopolitics could influence the production of various commodities and the flow of metal. I think in that environment, you're likely to see stronger demand than what market balances would suggest, and perhaps even somewhat inefficient demand. Normally it would go to the lowest cost area, but now because of supply chain issues, you could see excess capacity being built and not fully utilized. And so if you add to that on the supply picture, you really start to see, across many different commodities, how adverse sort of weather and natural disasters, et cetera, and even just declining grades are impacting the supply coming out of mines. And so if you compound those two views, plus this theory that real assets are starting to benefit from debasement, then as a house, I think we are fairly constructive across most commodities, especially, as I mentioned, precious metals and base metals like copper, aluminium, a bit less so on the bulk metals or bulk commodities like iron ore and thermal coal, where we believe there's just sort of structural demand headwinds on that side.
Mohammed, thank you very much for your excellent analysis. That was Mohammed Dokret, analyst at 91. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.